Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Slice of Healthcare. I'm your host, Jared Taylor. This is an interesting episode because we have a CRNA on, Barry Miller. Barry Miller is the lead nurse anesthetist for Dr. Miami. Some of you may have heard of Dr. Miami, a very popular plastic surgeon that's been in the industry for quite some time. So Barry has a pretty substantial following on Instagram, and Dr. Miami is crushing it as well. So we're very excited to have Barry on. So without further ado, let's bring Barry on.
Are you there?
Hi, Barry.
Yes, I'm here.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us on the Slice of Healthcare podcast.
Oh, glad to be here.
How's your day going so far?
Not bad. Can't complain. Got visitors from Venezuela staying here. My wife's family's here. We took them out for breakfast, and we had an early breakfast, so I could be back and talk with you.
Excellent. Now, you're down near Miami area, right? Fort Lauderdale?
Yeah, I'm just outside of Fort Lauderdale.
Interesting. Nice. I actually have family that have a place down in Davie, Florida.
Oh yeah, I grew up just outside of Davie.
Oh, nice. Yeah, they just have a condo. They're snowbirds, but they're right across from that Nova Southeastern.
Yep. Yep.
It's a nice area. They like
yep.
it.
Yep.
Great. Well, let's get into some of these questions. I think it'd be a great way to start the conversation off with telling the audience a little bit about you, your background.
Okay.
And we can go from there.
Okay. Well, of course, my name is Barry Miller. I am a certified registered nurse anesthetist. I'm also double certified as an advanced registered nurse practitioner, and I've got an MBA as well. I have been practicing nursing about 30 years. Maybe even longer. And I've been a nurse anesthetist for 19 years. And my current employer is someone of note by the name of Dr. Miami, that some of your audience may know very well. He is a huge social media presence. In fact, I can't remember the name of the organization that kind of is like the Oscars for Snapchat, but he was the number two Snapchatter behind DJ Khaled in the world last year. And
wow.
That's pretty much how I got involved with social media was I am his, you know, primary anesthetist and for the last 12 years. Excuse me. And when he blew up with social media, pretty much, you know, they said to me in the office, you know, you better start doing this stuff and kind of learning this because you don't want to get, you know, left behind. Understanding that pretty much, you know, like I'm 56. I'm the oldest person in the entire building. And probably was the farthest from being interested in social media at that time. I really kind of thought, you know, like, what do I need social media for? You know, I don't care if my friends know, you know, if I'm in the bathroom or what I had for breakfast or whatever. And then I kind of saw its usefulness as it kind of grew on me. So I don't know if I'm going off the beaten path of what you were looking to hear, but I am also I'm married. Been married for about 10 years. I have a son who is 8 years old, and he is the center of my universe, pretty much. I'm a commercial pilot. I flew professionally for a while. Used to fly pretty much everything up, including the largest aircraft I flew was a DC-9. I did most of my professional flying as a corporate pilot flying Lear jets, Lear 25s and 35s and 36s. I kind of think of myself a bit of a renaissance kind of dude. You know, my younger days, I was really into a lot of different stuff, scuba diving. I went to culinary school, learned how to cook. I just kind of, you know, dabbled in this and that.
Interesting. Very interesting. What made you decide to become a CRNA?
Well, you know, that's kind of one of these stories. It's actually a kind of a cool story. When I was 15 years old or 14, I was just finished school for that year, and it was the summertime, and my parents said to me, "Hey, you know, what do you want to do this summer?" And I said, I really don't know. I don't, you know, I was kind of like one of those kids. And my mom said, "Well, you're not going to hang around the house and bother me." So she brought me over to the local hospital and said, "You know, I know of a friend of mine. Their child is volunteering for the summer. You're going to volunteer at the hospital." Now, it sounds kind of an odd thing, and it would be, except for the fact that when I was a kid, I was born with a congenital heart defect, and I had my heart surgery when I was 9 years old. So I was always in and out of hospitals, doctor's offices. I was around healthcare a lot, and for whatever reason, it didn't seem to scare me. It just kind of interested me. And you know, if you were to talk to my mom, she would tell you that, like, I wasn't the kind of kid that, you know, was fearful of getting an injection or blood draw. It kind of became almost second nature to me over a time. And so I kind of had that interest. So when my mom said, "You're going to be a volunteer," I was like, it's not so bad. So I volunteered in a local hospital that summer, and they sent me, they weren't used to having male volunteers, you know, the candy stripers kind of thing. And so what they did was they sent me to the operating room, and I was supposed to help push patients and move boxes and things like that, whatever they could find for me to do. And I was standing outside an operating room, peering through the window, looking, and I was just fascinated by what was going on. And after a while, the anesthesia provider came over to the door, opened it up, and said, "Young man," he says, "you can't stand right here in the doorway all day long. So you can either leave and go do something else, or you can come in and watch it with me." So I was like, "Really?" So he helped me get out, you know, a mask on and booties and all that stuff. And I went in the operating room, and he sat me down next to him and explained everything to me. Though I was, you know, a much older a person. And I was just amazed at everything that was going on, especially this guy, this role model. Well, he was a nurse anesthetist, and he explained what that was. And I, from that moment on, from that summer, I pretty much knew that's what I wanted to do. And it's kind of a unique story. And I had like my life path set that early. And I followed it. And I took a few, you know, turns. But I kept my eye on the goal all the time. And I ended up you know, accomplishing my major goal, which was to become a nurse anesthetist.
Very interesting. Wow. That's a great story. I hear a lot of these types of stories, but that one definitely very unique. definitely. I can tell how that can leave like a lasting impression and really get you interested in something.
For sure. For sure.
That's very interesting.
And you know, I can't remember the guy's last name, but I do remember his first name was Jim. And by now he would, you know, I'm sure he's not still alive. But, you know, boy, I wish I could have met him as an adult to thank him, to shake his hand and thank him. And he gave me a nickname that stuck with me for years. I don't, it, you know, not anymore, but because I was very frenetic and had a lot of energy. He called me Skeeter, like a mosquito. It's a southern term for mosquito. He's a skeeter, and I was known as Skeeter for a very long time.
Oh, geez.
Yeah.
I want to roll off of you talking about why you decided to be a CRNA with talking about what a typical day looks like for you.
Well, okay. I can, you tell me what you prefer, because my day now as a anesthetist in a cosmetic surgeon's office is one day. But if you want to paint the picture of what my day used to look like at working in a large teaching hospital, that's a completely different kind of day. So you kind of tell me what you think your audience would be more interested in hearing.
Absolutely. Why don't you give me a quick rundown about what your current day looks like right now? And okay. Then instead of going into the other, like what your day used to look like, maybe just tell me what are the major differences today?
Okay. I guess we could do that. Sure. We start pretty early. My day is I'm going to kind of run it down on a timeline here. I typically get up at about 5 o'clock in the morning. So I can, get out of my home. I live about almost an hour drive from my office. So, that's why I have to get up so early, but, I get up at 5 in the morning, get to the gym by 6, and I, work out at a local gym until about 7, take a shower, change into my scrubs, and go to the office, and I'm in there by 7:20 in the morning. When I arrive, excuse me, when I arrive, I'll confirm what our OR schedule looks like, how, you know, the day is going to play out, and kind of formulate a general plan for the day. Then immediately after that, before I do anything else, I pretty much go and see the patient and interview her. And I say her because, you know, some 97%, 98% of our patients are female in cosmetic surgery. So I will do a anesthesia and health assessment with the patient, which is crucial for me to generate a valid anesthesia plan. I'll give the patient some preoperative medications at that time, and then I'll go into the operating room and do my safety checks, check all my gases, make sure, of course, I have plenty of nitrous oxide, oxygen, and anesthesia gas. I'll continue on doing a machine check, checking the anesthesia machine from top to bottom. That goes without fail every single day. That's the first thing I do when I go in there. And then I'll set everything up for that first patient based on the plan that I've promulgated. I'll draw up medications based on that plan. I'll set up my IVs, my warmers, and get the room all prepped. At the same time, the OR staff is setting up the room for what they need. And then we wait for the arrival of the surgeon. He goes and sees the patient, takes pictures, goes over any last minute questions. When he will then come back into the operating room and tell me it's okay to take her back. I'll bring the patient back to the operating room, lay her down on the operating room table. That's generally when patients really start to get very anxious. And so from the moment I bring them into the operating room, I try and, you know, not dilly-dally. I try and get everything going quickly, because most patients start freaking out the longer that they're awake on the operating room table. So once they lay down, I put on all of our monitors, blood pressure, heart monitor, a little probe that goes on their finger to measure the oxygen content in the blood. I'll start an IV, And as soon as I start that IV, I give the patient some medication, like a sedative kind of thing, to relax them so they're not freaking out. And I'll let them breathe some oxygen for a minute or two before I drift them off to sleep. And then I drift them off to sleep with an injection through the IV, put a breathing tube into their windpipe, otherwise known as the trachea. And off we go to do the surgical case. I'm continuously monitoring them and tweaking the anesthetics, oxygen flow, ventilator support, and things like that throughout the case, because anesthesia is as much an art as it is a science. People are kind of surprised at that, but it's true. It's probably 50-50, to be honest with you. And towards the end of the case, I'm lightening up the anesthetic, timing it such that, and that's the art part, that's part of the art, timing it such that the patient is at a very light anesthetic level at the end of the case. That way I can wake them up quickly because, in any business, time is money. And once they're woken up and that breathing tube is taken out of their trachea, we secure them, bring them over to the recovery area where they will recover for about an hour, and then off they go. I work in concert with an RN in the recovery room, and with the surgeon. But I'm very blessed and lucky that the surgeon gives me 100% control of anesthetic-related issues. So pretty much what I say goes in there. Now, to contrast that kind of thing with working in a big hospital, the biggest thing that I can point out is that you don't have that kind of autonomous practice in the hospital setting. In the hospital, you've got anesthesiologists and other nurse anesthetists and anesthesia techs, and you may even have an anesthesia assistant. In the office, I'm it. That's it. And there's nobody else. In the hospital, there's a whole team of people, which is good and bad. It gives me the autonomy in the office that I want after being in practice for so many years. But when you're in the hospital, you're doing much, a huge variety of caseload. And depending on the kind of facility that you're working in, will de depend on, you might have a gunshot wound trauma come in early in the morning, and then right after that, you may, do a broken hip, and then after that, you might have to go do an epidural and labor and delivery for a woman that's in labor. So your experience in the hospital is very varied and is never the same in any one given day. But you have to answer to a lot of other people. And the acuity of your patient load, by definition, a patient coming to the office is a healthy patient. And we grade their health based on a grading scale. And they're at the top of that grading scale in terms of their health. When you're in the hospital, not only you may not know if they're a trauma, you may not know anything about their health, but in general, they're much sicker patients. And in today's society, and the way insurance and things like that is running, you may have very, very sick patients that haven't had any kind of health care coverage for themselves in a long time. So that's the biggest, I guess, contrast and comparison that, I can make.
No, that's great. That was a great breakdown. Thank you for sharing. So I wanted to ask this question as well. How do you feel your experience in the military helped you in nursing?
Well, I was in the Air Force as a reservist for 10 years, and I gave anesthesia in the Air Force. I can tell you that there is no better place to gain experience than in the military, at least for anesthesia. They are very progressive, very forward thinking. They have the latest equipment, and everybody in the military is super motivated because it's a volunteer service. So if you're there and you're a nurse anesthetist or you're a physician, you're there because you want to be there, not because you're required to be there. And all the people that I met in the healthcare service in the Air Force were amazing people. They all wanted the best for our servicemen, and they all work really hard to provide that. And I learned more about certain anesthetic techniques that I knew nothing about or very little about coming out of school. Basically, that's regional anesthesia. That basically is where you can, you know, numb up a part of the body by knowing, you know, anatomical structures very well, and using some other assistive devices to deliver a local anesthetic, similar to like how your dentist numbs up your jaw. Well, I can do that all over the body. And I would not have had that experience at all if I had been just in the civilian world. So that made me a well-rounded, much better anesthetist, and, you know, more educated, in fact, because you have to learn a lot more science and physiology and anatomy than you would have learned, you know, without that experience. So I have nothing but positive things to say about being in any of the military services in healthcare.
Yeah, I've heard of a lot of people have said the exact same thing. They've echoed your thoughts on that. They felt that it really prepared them, especially for anesthesia, but I've heard other specialties as well that it's done the same.
True. And if I may, I'll just, because this is kind of like a little soapbox I get on, because I loved my experience in the Air Force. The reason that they're so aggressive with the regional anesthesia technique and being able to do that is because if you think back, if you think now, all of the, a lot of the injuries that are coming back from Afghanistan, IEDs, mines, and explosive things, and they get a lot of limb injury and limb trauma. And so if you're in a situation where it's you've had, you know, like a Humvee that got blown up, and you've got three badly injured servicemen in front of you, you don't have to pick just one of them, the sickest one, and operate on him. You can operate and give anesthesia to all three. So I would put somebody, the sickest one, at my 12 o'clock position. Then I could put somebody with a less severe injury at my 9 o'clock and one at my 3 o'clock and give anesthesia to all three people at the same time.
Wow.
In theory, I would, you know, do regional anesthesia on the guy at 9 o'clock and regional anesthesia on the guy at 3 o'clock. And I would be, you know, monitoring them and dealing with them with the focus on my most sickest guy at the 12 o'clock position. Now, is that the best situation? Of course not. It should be just one-to-one. But you're talking about war, and you're talking about, you know, everything but the best of situations. So, you know, in that situation, you're able to overcome the odds and deliver care to three people at the same time. Now, would you do that in the civilian world? Never. It's, you know, it's just not appropriate. But you know, I got trained to be able to do that should I need to. And when I was in service, there were no active wars. In fact, I was I got discharged from the Air Force right after 9/11. I was supposed to be discharged October of that year, but because of 9/11, they put a stop loss, and no military people were allowed out of the military for about 2 years.
Wow.
So, yeah.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Very interesting. I wanted to ask this question because this is one I was very curious about as well. And I think there is value, but that's my opinion. But what do you think is the educational value of posting a Snapchat video in your line of work as well?
Well, I don't know if you have seen my IG. I'm not on Snapchat. I'm on IG. It's a better platform for me. A little plug here. If anybody wants to follow me on IG, it's at Barry Miller, CRNA, no spaces. You know, first and foremost, I could say, you know, if you watch my Instagram yourself, if you've seen it, you know that I do a completely educational Instagram. I mean, not completely, but my work-related stuff is educational in nature. And for whatever reason, I really like to educate and teach and train. In fact, I'm a part of a diversity program in nurse anesthesia, and I have people that want to become nurse anesthetists that come from disadvantaged or less advantaged positions that come and will shadow me so they can see what's going on, and I can do the same kind of thing that I'm doing now, informing them and enlightening them. But I have a cadre of about 7,000 followers, which isn't, you know, a lot, but they're all really, really engaged in what I put out there for content. And I put, I'll put, you know, healthcare related quizzes, and I call them snap quizzes. And then whoever wins, whoever gives me the answer first, I usually shout them out. You know, it's kind of nice for them, I guess. And it's educational at the same time. I put up diagrams and explain, you know, current concepts of anesthesia. I do my story on Instagram, which is kind of, you know, more like Snapchat's video. And I will, on a daily basis, go through the whole induction or the beginning of general anesthesia with them, from starting the IV and going to sleep. And I mean, they see everything I do, they see from my point of view. With the help of one of the PAs in our office, he's awesome, I have a lot of people that are really, really interactive with me, and I love it when they ask questions and they go back and forth, or when, you know, sometimes on an occasion they'll argue with me. They may be, most of the people that follow me are student nurse anesthetists. I have a lot of nurse anesthetists as well that are certified nurse anesthetists. I have registered nurses that want to become anesthetists. And everybody is there because, obviously because they want to be, but because I'm hoping that they get some educational value as to what I'm trying to share with them, you know, coming from a healthcare perspective as long as mine has been.
Interesting. Yeah, mm-hmm. I've watched a couple of your live Instagram. What's the videos that you have, and they're pretty mm-hmm. they're pretty interesting. And you're very engaging. And everyone that's included in your videos is pretty. Even I think you've even had some patients in there that are actually like pretty, just happy to be a part of whatever it is you're doing with it.
And let me say this for your audience. You know, we are strictly abide by HIPAA regulations, and our patients, you know, nobody's forced into being on either Dr. Miami Snapchat or my Instagram feeds, and they have to give both verbal and written permission for us to do it. And in probably 99% of the case, you know, they want to be anonymous, and we protect their identity. Occasionally we have people that, you know, are like really cool and interactive, and they say, no, it's cool. You could show my face. And then when that happens, I really, really get into it with them And, you know, kind of I try and almost interview them a little bit on camera so that patients, other patients that follow and other people that follow can see what it's really like to be on that operating room table. It's kind of a, you know, a cool experience.
Yeah. I mean, your videos are great. So we look forward to more of those. And I know you said the plug. I want to let you know too, and the audience know, I am going to put your social links in the show notes. So they'll be able to have those direct linked right to you. Cool. And we'll also do some posts online that will tag you and direct back to you as well once everything goes live, which would be great.
Very cool.
I wanted to ask you one more thing.
Sure.
And that was, what is your favorite procedure to perform?
You know, it's funny that you should say that. My favorite procedures to perform are ones that I no longer do.
Wow.
Because they were very aggressive, very invasive things that can only be done at a very large teaching hospital that would allow an anesthetist to do those things. I used to be, I have what we call in the business really good hands. Like I have really, I'm proficient at using my hands to do procedures. And I'm not patting myself on the back. It just is like that. And I've been very blessed and lucky to have that. So I used to love putting in Swan-Ganz catheters for open heart surgery. That's a very large multi-lumen catheter that you place on the side of someone's neck going down into a big blood vessel, and it literally drops down into their heart and measures heart pressures. In addition, I used to love starting what's called an A-line or an arterial line, which is where you put a catheter in someone's wrist into the artery so that you will be able to measure their blood pressure beat by beat and draw blood specimens quickly and efficiently. And then I used to do, again, the regional anesthesia, being able to anesthetize parts of the body. That's like the coolest challenge for me. I used to love doing that stuff, but all that stuff is all only hospital-based practice. And unfortunately, you know, for like the last 10, 11 years, I haven't really done very much of that at all.
Interesting. I did not think you'd say it would be one that you no longer do. So that's interesting. But I guess
I kind of miss it. I'm not kind of, I do. You can probably hear it in my voice because I'm smiling as I'm thinking back on, you know, the day when I was in the big hospital. And I used to work at a trauma hospital in Fort Lauderdale, and it was a level 1 trauma hospital. And in fact, I was one of the first 5 anesthetists that started this trauma anesthesia program. And there was nothing like being on call in my call room, and at 3 o'clock in the morning, the beeper going off, you know, and it tells you that there's a big trauma alert coming in. So you'd have to run literally, you know, like get yourself together in 2 seconds, run, you know, 4 buildings over down to the trauma bay and await for this patient to come. And it was just the biggest rush. You know, now at this point in my career, I wouldn't want to do that, of course, but that kind of stuff was the big thing for me back then. And I no longer do it.
Interesting.
Yes.
Very interesting. Huh. Well, Barry, I want to thank you so much for coming on the podcast today and telling us about, you know, your past, what you're currently doing, and a few other things as well. So we really appreciate it. And, you know, do you have anything else you want to tell the audience before I said, include your social tags in the show notes so that they can follow you and check out your page and everything, which
sure,
I suggest
sure.
everyone do. But anything else you'd like to say before we sign off?
Yeah, I guess a couple of things. One would be if you're thinking about anesthesia as a career, I can say nothing bad at all about my anesthesia experience over the last 20 years. It is challenging. It's financially rewarding. It is, it makes you feel good about yourself most of the time. Not to say that there's no negative things to say, but all in all, the positive things outweigh the negative things. And I would encourage any person that is thinking about it to go there, do that, and make it happen for yourself, because it's really good profession with really good benefits and that sort of stuff. And the other thing I wanted to say is, it sounds like a plug, but if you do check out my social media presence, contact me, via direct message or however you choose. If you have any questions about anesthesia, I answer them quickly, and I just love to be engaged with the followers and help people out as much as I can. That's it.
Well, that's great, Barry. Thank you. We appreciate that. And let me know if you want to word that in the show notes in any way like that. I'm happy to put that in there.
Sure,
next to
absolutely.
Your social tag, so we can talk about that. And okay. Get that done. But hopefully we can have you on again in the future, maybe in the next couple months or next year or something, kind of see what's changed for you and where you see anesthesia heading. We can go from there.
Awesome. You got it. There's a very hot topic out there that I'd love to discuss. It's opioid-free anesthesia, which is coming to the forefront right now. And it's a whole huge change in the mindset and physiology of anesthesia, and that would be a great topic to talk about.
Maybe we'll have to get you on sooner then. Maybe we'll plan another episode in like the next
absolutely.
Month or something. Okay, let's
absolutely.
Do that then. I want to talk about that.
Okay,
and we'll dive into that. That sounds like we can have a full episode just off of that.
Oh, for sure.
Great. Okay. Well.
All right. Well,
let's
it was
that.
Nice talking with you, Jared.
Great talking with you, Barry. Have a great day.
All right. You too, sir. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thank you to everyone who tuned in for another episode of Slice of Healthcare. Please be sure to follow us on our social channels. On pretty much every social channel, it's at Slice of Healthcare. On Twitter, it's at Slice of HC. We don't use that much, but we will answer if anyone tweets at us or sends us a message there. Also, for those of you that are listening on iTunes, please be sure to head over to iTunes, leave us a rating/review. We'd really appreciate the support and feedback. And if you're interested in being a guest on the podcast, please reach out at sliceofhealthcare@gmail.com or send us a message on Instagram or any of our other channels, and we'll get right back to you. Thanks, and everyone have a great day.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.